Hello and welcome to another edition of the Byron York Show, the No Chit Chat podcast, brought to you today by the Bradley Foundation. We'll talk more about that in a few minutes, but first we want to get right into it. And actually, I should say one thing before we get right into it. I'm sorry if I sound a little raspy today. It's big time hay fever season here in Washington, so got a lot of that, sound a little raspy. So what I want to get into first, we're going to talk about a couple of things today. First, I want to talk about something that's been a really kind of ugly turn in Washington. It sounds kind of redundant. That happens in a lot of things in Washington. But this has to do with the Democratic Party's obsession with identity politics. You may have heard, hadn't got a lot of coverage, but a Democratic senator, Tammy Duckworth, who was backed up by another Democratic senator, Mazie Hirono, she declared that she would not vote to confirm any white nominees for any administration positions. No white people. She would only make one exception, she said, and that would be is if a white nominee is also either gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, or queer. So if there's an exception there, she would vote for a white nominee. Otherwise, no votes on white nominees. Now, the story unfolds. I don't know if you follow Chad Pergram. He's the Fox News Capitol Hill reporter. Very valuable person to follow on Twitter. He tweeted that Duckworth told a pool reporter, quote, "I am a no vote on the floor on all non-diversity nominees. You know, I will vote for racial minorities and I will vote for LGBTQ, but anybody else, I'm not voting for." That's end quote. Now, this message is absolutely clear. You can't confuse it. Politico said in the Playbook newsletter, quote, "Duckworth vowed to reject any nominee who is white and straight." There's just no doubt about it. So why did she do it? She said she was acting out of frustration with the lack of administration cabinet-level nominees who are Asian Pacific and Pacific Islanders. You might see that referred a lot to as AAPI. Duckworth said that she raised the issue with the Biden White House in a meeting on Monday night. Now, according to the New York Times, I'll quote the New York Times here. "During the meeting Monday night, Ms. Duckworth said that White House Deputy Chief of Staff Jennifer O'Malley Dillon pointed out that Vice President Kamala Harris, whose mother was from India, and Katherine Tai, the top American trade envoy, who is of Chinese descent, were Asian American." So the White House is saying, look, come on, we have nominated or elevated Asian Americans or Pacific Islanders to important positions. Is the Vice President of the United States important enough for you? But it wasn't enough for Senator Duckworth. The next day, she tells reporters that she found the White House's answer to her insulting, quote, insulting. She said the White House would not treat African-American concerns so lightly. I'm going to read you a quote from Senator Duckworth. "That is not something you would say to the Black Caucus. Well, you have Kamala. We're not going to put any more African-Americans in the cabinet because you have Kamala." And that's what Duckworth told reporters. I mean, this is one of the things that you see with this emphasis on racial politics and identity politics, is group is pitted against group. So Tammy Duckworth is saying that, you wouldn't treat Black people this way, the way you're treating me. Now, at this point, a number of people will probably say, now, wait a minute, Tammy Duckworth is an extraordinary person. She's done extraordinary things, and you really should cut her some slack on this. And I will say, she is an extraordinary person. She was born in Thailand in 1968. Her father was an American, and her mother was Thai. And the family moved to Hawaii when she was 16. Now, she later joined the U.S. Army. She became a helicopter pilot. She served in the Iraq War. In 2004, she lost both her legs, and she suffered serious injuries to one arm when an Iraqi RPG, a rocket-propelled grenade, brought down her helicopter. Okay. After recovery, she worked in various positions involving Veterans Affairs. She won a seat in the House of Representatives from Illinois in 2012 and a seat in the Senate in 2016. So Tammy Duckworth has done extraordinary things, has rendered great service to the United States, and she deserves to say what she wants. On the other hand, there is this issue of refusing to vote for white people on the basis of race, refusing to vote for nominees on the basis of race, which is really an extraordinary turn. So this standoff, a standoff ensues. I mean, you know, the White House is trying to tell the senator, look, we're paying attention to Asian American concerns. And the senator is saying, no, it's not enough. You wouldn't treat me this way if I were from the Black caucus. So the standoff ends late Tuesday when Duckworth backs down. Now, she did so after the White House promised to appoint, quoting here, a senior-level Asian American Pacific Islander liaison. That's what the White House spokeswoman, Jen Psaki, called it, who will ensure that the community's voice is further represented and heard. So this is a little bit of a fig leaf for Senator Duckworth, gives her a way to back down from this extreme position that she has taken, and to just kind of act like it's all over. What made the Duckworth episode somewhat ironic is that President Biden has delivered on his promise to make his cabinet the, quote, most diverse in U.S. history. It is so diverse, in fact, that it does not precisely reflect the U.S. population. Now, according to an analysis by National Public Radio, Biden's cabinet is, quote, nearly 55% non-white. According to the Census Bureau, the number of Americans who are white alone, that is, they're not Hispanic, Latino, is 60%. So the Biden cabinet is more non-white than the country as a whole, just as, say, the Republican Party is more white than the country as a whole. In any event, it is hard to accuse Biden of not paying attention to the Democratic Party's diversity concerns. But Biden's idea of diversity is apparently not Senator Duckworth's idea of diversity. Such controversies, pitting group against group, are sure to recur inside the president's party. Now, I'm going to wrap this part up here. I mean, it's almost needless to say it, but I will say it. It is impossible to imagine the furor that would arise in the press and in the political world if a U.S. senator vowed to vote against every nominee of color, voting only for nominees who were white and heterosexual, voting against every nominee of color unless the White House satisfied a specific demand. It is difficult to imagine what would happen then. But that is what has happened in the Democratic Party today, and we're likely to see repeats of this and perhaps even stranger episodes in the future. Now, I want to talk about something else about Biden that's actually kind of unusual information, after a brief word from the Bradley Foundation. It seems like Americans have had to navigate through multiple crises this year. The Bradley Foundation has a speaker series called We the People, and it offers insights and ideas on these challenges that we face, and also on some of the remarkable organizations that the Bradley Foundation supports. So, you should visit bradleyfoundation.org/liberty. And I'm going to spell that all the way through in just a second. Visit bradleyfoundation.org to watch their most recent episode featuring Mark Janis and Pat Hughes of the Liberty Justice Center. Now, Mark and Pat took on public sector unions in this landmark Supreme case called Janis versus AFSCME. AFSCME is the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. It's the biggest and most powerful government workers' union. Now, as a result of this case, government workers are no longer required to financially support a union at their workplace. Now, Mark and Pat discuss lessons learned, the Liberty Justice Center's plans to inform government workers of their Janus rights, and the latest developments in workplace freedom. It's a very important message. So, go to bradleyfoundation.org/liberty. That's Bradley with an L-E-Y at the end, FDN.org/liberty. I'm going to spell the whole thing out. bradleyfdn.org/liberty. Go there, watch the video. New episodes will debut every other week, so you should come back often and subscribe to the Bradley Foundation YouTube channel to be notified whenever a new one is posted. Give it a look. Okay, I told you I was going to talk about some unusual news about President Biden, and it has to do with the polls. There has been a dramatic change in polling related to President Biden that you haven't really heard a lot about. It's actually very favorable to President Biden. It concerns the most commonly asked question in political polling, which is, in general, would you say things in the country are headed in the right direction, or do you think they're on the wrong track? Now, almost every poll asks that in some way or another. And Americans in recent years have mostly said things are on the wrong track to varying degrees. And they still do. But look at the numbers. There's going to be a lot of numbers in this. Look at the numbers in the Real Clear Politics average of polls. On January 18, okay, this is just 2 days before Inauguration Day, it showed that 70% of Americans said the country was on the wrong track versus 20% who said it was on the right track. That is a difference of 50 points. 50 points. Now, the difference has shrunk to 8.2 points. That's a huge drop. In the latest Real Clear Politics average, 51.5% of those who were polled said things are on the wrong track. So they still, a majority still thinks it's on the wrong track. While 43.3% said things are on the right track. That 8.2 percentage point difference is the smallest in more than a decade. So you go from having, just before Inauguration Day, a 50-point differential between those who say we're on the wrong track versus those who say we're on the right track. Now it's an 8-point differential. So what has happened is the number of people who say we're on the wrong track has fallen dramatically, and the number of people who say we're on the right track has risen dramatically. Now, why isn't the Biden White House crowing about this? I have to tell you, I don't know. But whatever the reason, the numbers indicate a significant change in the national mood. Now, every time I do a story or a newsletter about polling, by the way, I should tell you to subscribe to my newsletter, please. The Byron York Daily Memo. Just go to WashingtonExaminer.com and you can subscribe to the newsletter. Every time I talk about polling, a lot of people on my Twitter feed said, ha ha ha, we don't believe any of it. Don't believe the polls. Forget it. Happens all the time. But I do believe in them. Clearly, they've been wrong on a few occasions. But I think they still have a lot of value. So let's go backward through these numbers. In late February 2020, okay, a year ago, just before the coronavirus pandemic struck, 54% said the country was on the wrong track versus 40% who said it was on the right track. And that's just a 14-point difference. That's actually pretty good, given that most of the time, a majority of Americans say we're on the wrong track. We're kind of dissatisfied all the time. It was pretty good. And at that brief moment, and here again, we're talking about February 2020, the re-election prospects for President Trump seemed pretty bright. At another point in the Trump presidency, the numbers were even better, which is August 2018, and there was a 10-point gap. 51% had said the country was on the wrong track versus 41% who said it was on the right track. So the numbers had actually been reasonably good at a couple of occasions in the Trump presidency. Go back further. Barack Obama experienced huge gaps in his numbers. In October 2013, 75% of the country said we're on the wrong track versus 17% who say it was on the right track. That's a 58-point difference. 58. In October 2011, 76% say we're on the wrong track versus 17% who say we're on the right track. That's a 59-point difference. So, I mean, there were times during the Obama years when a lot of people thought we were on the wrong track. Now, Obama's lows were lower than Trump's ever were. I mean, 17% of the people who think we're on the right track, that is almost nothing. But his highs were higher. And for a very brief moment in 2009, remember, he's inaugurated in January 2009, by that summer, the number of people who think the country is on the right track, the wrong track, 48.5%, was exactly equal to the number who thought it was on the right track. So you had people tied, basically. An equal number of people said we're on the right track versus the people who said we're on the wrong track. And in political news, that's really, really good because most people say we're on the wrong track most of the time. There was an extraordinary amount of optimism for that brief moment in 2009, and then it was kind of a rocky ride after that. But the movement we've had recently is the most dramatic we've had in a long time. As I said before, under Biden, the number of people who say the country on the wrong track has plummeted, while the number of people who say the country is on the right track has shot upward. And that's going to change. It always does. But Biden is enjoying a moment of approval. And that's something Republicans need to keep an eye on as they pick their places to oppose and resist, if you will, the Biden administration. Right now, people are feeling better about the direction of the country than they have in quite a while. The change has been dramatic, and it has been very, very fast. So, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. Thanks for joining me, and I hope you join me again soon for another edition of the Byron Show.